is Icon Art Radio, and it's Alan Cobb, Donna Colby, and myself, and we're the hosts, and we have a guest today, and that is Adrienne Dowler,
Hello.
Donna's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Yay.
So she's in town, she's just flown in from the continent, not the continent, from the island off the continent,
Indeed.
England.
Yes. It's not even Europe.
I've always been a little bit confused about all of that.
It is part of Europe. It's in the European Union, sort of.
But we used to think of the continent as Europe.
Yes. Brits have tended United to Kingdom. Think of the UK as being not Europe.
They prefer to think of it as separate, but it actually is part of Europe.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole rest of the planet thinks that.
Yeah. It doesn't totally seem like it is. It's quite a different world.
All right, so you've just flown in from England.
Yes.
And so Donna knows the most of your life and history, being your mother, so she can kind of pinpoint things we might want to talk to you about.
She's this
amazing singer. All of us in Fairfield know that, but those in Australia and Paris and Santa Cruz that are listening might like to know that.
So tell me about myself, Mom.
Ask your daughter a few questions to get this rolling, or bring up the subject we might want to discuss.
We're lucky
to have her on the radio.
Yeah, and I'm lucky to have her in Fairfield. All of us are lucky. Her friends are happy to see her here. So I will weave stories in throughout the show. I don't want to just start out telling stories about your childhood, but...
Thanks, I appreciate that.
But probably give a little bit of a history for the listening audience.
Yeah, people would probably like to. Let's start out with more recent history, and why don't you tell the listeners.
And what a beautiful baby she was.
Why don't you tell the listeners what you were doing in England for the last 5 years?
Okay. I moved to Guildford in Surrey, southeast of London, to attend the Guildford School of Acting Conservatoire, which was a theater arts conservatory. And I studied musical theater there for 3 years, which was very cool. It's quite a unique place. We had some classes that weren't necessarily the most useful classes for my future career, but were very interesting. Like, we did animal studies for an entire 3 month term where we just studied the same one animal for the entire 3 months. And we didn't turn the animal into a character or anything. We just studied the animal for 3 months, and I would have to be the animal. And I did a wolf, and I would have to howl and do the whole thing. I'm not going to howl on air if that's cool.
It's quite all right.
But but it was great. It was a lot of work, and it was fantastic. And the school has a lot of good connections in the theater industry in London. So I got an agent in musical theater from the showcase I did there. Went into a national tour of a musical called Godspell, which, if you've probably heard of it, came out in the 70s.
A year ago.
Oh, yeah, they did it in Fairfield recently. It's Bible stories, basically. And then I got a job singing in a jazz kind of bistro place in North London. And from that, I did a couple of concerts in Bournemouth, and then got a job in Italy singing in a jazz bar, and also singing disco dance music, basically, to honeymooners and tourists in Sorrento, Italy, at a 5-star hotel. During which time I was preparing to move back to America because the lovely UK Home Office decided to change the laws on me very suddenly. So I was propelled back to America after that. And that's basically what I was doing there.
Would you have just stayed on and on and on in England?
I think I probably would have. That wasn't my intention. I always meant to come back. But because I was working there, which was my goal, was to support myself full time as a singer, which is what ended up happening. I don't know that I would have ever decided just to leave. And I think eventually I would have gone, I actually did really want to go back one day. So I think it may be one of those things that just happened for a reason, and it worked out for the best, because I just got that push to just do it, just come back. And if I'm absolutely miserable here in America, I'll figure out a way to get back into England. But things have been going really well so far. So.
But not, it's kind of a clean slate, or do you?
Yeah.
Okay, that's always a great spot, I think. It's the moment of where creativity springs.
It is really cool, actually, because, I mean, there's so much happening in this town, especially since I moved away. There's people passing through constantly from other places, and I've already have a few projects and things musically and that I won't really talk about yet, but I'll be doing things soon, I'm sure. And so it doesn't feel stagnant at all. It feels like I'll still be moving forward, and I can take with me everything I learned in England, so it doesn't feel like I'm starting at the beginning again. So yeah.
So, I always ask, I'm not just asking you because you're
my
daughter.
You can ask me whatever. I always have to promise not to be embarrassed.
Every artist,
this is Donna's question.
Yeah, every artist that we interview on the show, I always ask, you know, how did you get your start in your art form? And I know the answer to this question because I was your mom, but I'm going to let you answer it, and I might chime in with some stories too.
Well, I think the two things that gave me the best start into doing theater was, one was taking singing lessons with a guy in Cedar Rapids called Harold Barlow, who passed away in 2002, I think. He was about 90, and he was from the Metropolitan Opera, and he was absolutely phenomenal and extremely eccentric. His house, he loved dead flowers. He had like vases of dead flowers everywhere and a massive shrine to his late wife. And the room where I had singing lessons was all red, like the walls were red. The doors had like matching shag carpet that matched the floor. And he had a massive fake horsehair couch. Actually, it might have been real horsehair. I think it was fake though, in the front room. It was, yeah, it was pretty wild.
Do you have pictures of this?
I don't think I have a picture of the whole house. I have a picture of him. He wore, I think it was a full wig, either that or like a really big toupee. And he would draw with like eyebrow pencil or something underneath his beard and mustache to like make it look darker.
Wow.
He was the coolest dude. And that changed my voice completely so that I could sing with a lot more power. And also doing theater and speech competition with Rodney Franz at Spade Theater was definitely turning point for me, I think.
Well, and during that, the Rodney Franz time too, we took a trip to New York City, and when Adrienne was maybe 15 or something like that, and she saw Ragtime on Broadway, and we were sitting in the front row of the mezzanine. She was leaning forward, and it was like she took it in by osmosis, you know, that, oh, that's what you have to do. That's how you have to project. That's how, you know. And right after that, she came back to Fairfield and auditioned for Into the Woods, which was her first big role with Rodney.
Okay.
And it really seemed like that direct observation of what you have to be, how big you have to be on stage, made the difference at that point.
Well, I've had that experience myself in many aspects of life that I began to excel in. I sort of like grokked it one day. And then I
you grokked it?
That's an old, that dates us.
Sorry,
carry on. You're a young person, you got three old people in the room here. It means you got it.
I want to grok something.
It's from the book.
Stranger in a Strange Land by Robert Heinlein.
Oh my.
That we all read.
Well, sorry,
but
carry on.
It's such a great term. I've used it all my life.
It entered the language in the 60s.
And I would have loved to be around in the 60s.
It just means
to learn the word
really
wrong.
Getting it.
All right, cool.
Yeah, you really got
something.
Yeah,
twigging
to
something.
It happened in athletics. I sort of like I suddenly could see myself doing what I wanted to do, and then I could do it. I mean, it's like you just got it all of a sudden, which is slightly different than grok, actually, now I think about what I'm trying to get at here. In any case, the thing about visual art is that you get it from the masters. That's why I constantly am telling my students to go, you know, stand in front of an original work by a master artist, because that's where you're going to get it. Otherwise, you'll stay at that, what we call the intermediate level, that I just try to avoid altogether.
Yeah,
keep going.
Yeah, definitely.
And when
I can really relate.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just this thing is transferred to you somehow.
You have to see the greats, because otherwise you think you're doing really well. Or at least for me, I would think I was doing great. Yeah. And then I would see someone, I would go, oh no, I could be doing a lot more. No,
they're your teachers, mm-hmm. I think. Once you've got the fundamentals down, then you have to go to the masters.
Yeah.
And that's where you see where you're headed and what you've got to do.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing about when Adrian was little,
here we go.
I'm not going to embarrass you. I won't
tell
you any embarrassing
ones,
I promise. Well, we just had music around all the time because Doug, her dad, you know, was always playing the piano and a big Hammond organ we had. And we had about, I also had collected lots of records, and between us we had about 2,000 record albums. And of all kinds of music. Mine were like Judy Garland and Big Band era, and all, you know, we had all the Dylan and the Stones and everything. And she heard music like that by the best musicians her entire childhood. It was just like constantly going in the house. And then we would take her to performances as often as possible. And I remember this, this probably won't be embarrassing, but
it's cool.
We
don't,
took,
don't worry. I'm only teasing
two
you.
Two different dance shows when she was like three. One was a modern dance group that performed, and she came home, and it was absolutely hilarious because she's 3 years old. We go into the living room, and she gets like the facial expression, the body language, and everything, and just like darts across the room doing an imitation of this modern dance, and we're like rolling on the floor. It was so funny, and she was completely serious, didn't break character or anything, because she was just practicing what she saw. And did the same thing with an Indian dancer that we saw and completely got that, the little vibe of it. So it was in her blood or bones, whatever, you know, from a very early age to be a performer.
I do remember finding a photograph that you'd taken of me dressed up as a bag lady.
Oh, yeah.
I think I like wanted to. It was like some character that I thought was cool. And I was like,
yeah, it was like you barely
some people dress as brides and I dress as a bag lady.
Well,
which is what I called it. It must have been in a movie or something that called this woman who had loads of bags a bag lady.
But the thing about that's amazing about the bag lady persona was, I think she was like 4 or 5 then, was the facial expression. It was like totally bag lady. And very fun.
So you're a method musical theater actor.
I don't know if I am anymore. I guess I was as a kid. But maybe a little bit. But I haven't been doing as much theater. I've just mostly just been doing singing now.
So that's what I was wondering. What is your love? Is the musical theater what you just feel in love with? Or do you like concert singing?
I've
or
moved
cabaret
on
singing?
To singing. Cabaret singing would be cool. But I think what I had trouble with in the musical theater industry was that, at least in London, the way it was, is everything is sort of in boxes. So there's almost stock characters. And if you don't fit into those categories, they don't really know where to put you because they just are too busy and they have to see too many people. And they, it's just easier for casting directors, it seems, to be, as soon as you walk in the door, they go, oh, she's that person. She's like, she's that type. She's that girl. Mm-hmm. And I think my voice and my looks weren't like totally matching because I have sort of a bluesy voice and yet I'm like petite and white. And it was like, they didn't always know where to put me, if I was right for like a leading part or if I was more like the feisty best friend that's in like all musicals or
musical
if I was like...
It's very kind of stereotyped.
Exactly,
actually.
It's
I mean,
all stereotypes.
All the stuff that's produced pretty much.
You know, and I didn't really like having to fit into that. And it wasn't making me a better performer because I was having to change my voice to suit... Mm-hmm. The type of music, and a lot of it was this, like, especially as an American, it's all like this really kind of nasally, twangy sounding, and I don't sound like that. So it, I don't know, it started to frustrate me anyway, like artistically. And then when I got my first singing job, it led to another singing job, which led to another singing job, and it was just happening a lot more easily. And I could, the fact that I was unique worked in my favor instead of against me, and so when I found out I was going to be moving back to America, I knew that I didn't want to go charging into musical theater world again because the people, especially in New York, the people who are doing that, there are so many more people doing that in New York than there are in London, that you have to be so driven and have this kind of fighter instinct to get to a level that's interesting. And because I'd been doing a a level that I was excited about in London, I would want to do the same level in America, and it would take a lot of fight to do that. And I didn't really think I had the drive in that direction, because I didn't really want to go fighting for something that I wasn't even sure that I wanted. Whereas singing, it seems to just happen. So I don't know, it was a combination of the different events in my life leading me to think, okay, no, this is a better direction for me, and also I'm just better at it and enjoy it more, I think. It's more interesting, I can do what I want.
Yeah, I like that. Now, is there any kind of a avant-garde experimental musical theater going on?
There's probably more in Fairfield than other places. There's all sorts of things happening here, and like, I remember when I was at MUM taking
it's so packaged, the musical theater, where but people, because all the people that like it are like romantics. They want to hear hear that again, over and over and over
it's
again.
It's getting more that way, actually.
So, it's like you're getting off on seeing it done again and again and again.
Well, we're doing a March Hare. We're doing Hair in March. Which is in Revival.
Well,
Hair
pushed the boundaries a little bit in that
back then.
Broke things in the 60s, it broke it a little bit out of that Oklahoma.
Oh, we're not doing it in the nude here.
Okay. Well, they barely did too. I saw it on Broadway, and it was just they would stood there
but in any case, it seems to have gone it's here. Like the nostalgia of it all.
Yeah.
The repeating of how it's done perfectly, so that everybody goes, oh yeah, that's sort of like what's happening with musical theater.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it seems like there must be people that love to do this, that are doing Dada theater.
Sure, there's some underground musical theater going
Definitely.
On.
I would be curious to know about.
Because I was auditioning for like big, I mean, on the West End, everything. I haven't ever seen anything really experimental that lasted for longer than
Probably about the case
the West
with
End.
Anything experimental.
Yeah, probably.
No,
because everything is pretty.
Lasting,
And it, now but the trend is pop music turned into a musical. So there's like there's the Queen musical, and there's one with Buddy Holly songs, and there was one with Elvis songs, and then there's Dirty Dancing, which is all of the songs from the movie Dirty Dancing, and a lot of it is songs that are, there's not as many original shows going into the West End, and then there's Mamma Mia with all the ABBA songs and. But there's more experimental things, I think, going on in smaller venues, and probably a lot more in America, because Americans love to be individuals, and I think there's a lot of that going on. Mm-hmm. And Paris as well, there's some cool things going on there. But I don't know as much. I've been just been singing in
but
my little box.
But the singing thing sounds pretty neat, pretty cool to me.
Yeah.
So who knows? That's one of the beautiful things, is the unknown out there that we're moving into.
Yeah. It's exciting. I don't know what's coming up next. Something cool, hopefully.
So tell the people how it was different living in England as opposed to living in the US.
I love England, probably more so now that I'm not there anymore, because I'm nostalgic about it already. But when I first moved there, it took some getting used to. It took me about a year to get used to the different way people interact with each other. The main thing was the sense of humor, because they, when I moved there, I think took myself 20 times more seriously than I do now, and was way more easily offended and oversensitive, whereas English people, if it's a sign of affection if they make fun of you. If they tease you, then it means that they are comfortable around you, and that's what they do. That's the English banter that they talk about all the time. And they always talk about liking someone if you like have banter with them. And that basically just means that you can kind of make fun of each other, really. And so at first I was really like, you guys, I can't help that I'm American. Like, because they would tease me about being American all the time. And then I started to go, oh, okay. I just have to make fun of them back. And then it became like this really freeing thing to me, because I stopped taking everything so seriously. And they don't take themselves that seriously. Because they just joke about it. And for me, I really liked that mentality. And they're also very, matter of fact about things, and kind of they have this sensibility that I appreciated a lot, where they didn't kind of get really wrapped up in their own journey and their own kind of issues and things. They would just be like, okay, well, you know, that's happening, so I better just get on with it. And that to me was really good, because Fairfield is a little bit the opposite, I find, where people are really like, you know, into kind of their personal journeys and things, which is great, but I think it's good to have a bit of both, and I think it brought me down to earth really well. So that I loved. The weather was a bit of a downer, because it's really rainy there all the time. And there's not really seasons. Like, it's not like here where you're like, oh, it's really cold in winter, but it's okay because spring is coming eventually. Mm-hmm. There it's kind of like a little bit the same all the time. And it'll be sunny in the morning and then cloudy again by like the middle of the day, which I just wasn't used to. I wasn't used to there not being sun. Mm-hmm. So by the time I went to Italy, I was pretty excited about being in the sun all day, every day, for like 4 months. That was brilliant.
So how did you like Europe as opposed to England, if we're going to just and I mean, you're talking about the people of England, very definite personality type in England.
Yeah.
How did you like the romantic types of Italy and France?
Well, I love Italy and I love the Italians. The men are ridiculously full on in terms of being like, like, ciao bella, hey. And they'll be like on their motorbikes, and they'll do like a full U-turn if there's a girl walking down the street and just like follow you down the street trying to talk to you. And that was like too much for me. I was like, not interested. But and the women are hilarious. I love they have like this huge respect for elder women. And you were saying they have the same thing in France, weren't you, Mom?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where if you're in the grocery store waiting in line and there's a elderly Italian woman behind you, she will usually, 9 times out of 10, she would cut in front of me and then start some like long, what sounded like an argument with the person. I mean, they demand respect. And I thought that was absolutely hilarious and kind of cool. Like, because they would just like charge around town and get things done like 3 times faster than anybody else, because they were just like, well, I'm an older woman, so I'm gonna just take what's mine. I was like, that's
well,
so
it
cool.
came from the other side too. I noticed in France where there would be widows who lived in certain neighborhoods, and if they would go to any restaurant or cafe in that neighborhood by themselves, somebody sitting near them would include them in their group. Yeah. Automatically, you know, they just like are not left alone. They are always made to feel like the whole neighborhood
really
is their family. So it was a beautiful thing to see that.
How did you know they were widows?
Well, I just assumed they were because they were older and they were there by themselves. Because normally, if they were, you would see like older couples,
but not,
they would have a different feel. They just seemed like they were widows.
I was imagining these people in black.
I did too. The image that came to our mind was a widow.
Baskets.
The veil. And
no, I guess I'll clarify.
Slumping
they were
along.
Elderly women who were alone.
But everyone demurs to them. Is that what you're ever? They do give them respect. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Oh,
the Italian women pretty
away.
Much demanded it. They're pretty. Italian women are strong women from what I saw. I mean, you have to be with the men like super passionate like that. But I like how the Italians, it's like they enjoy everything in life, but it's all in moderation. Like you never saw that. It was always the British tourists or the American tourists who were like falling out of the bars absolutely drunk. They would have like a few glasses of wine. They weren't like falling all over the place. Most of them would be smoking, but they were never like chain smoking out of stress, like you see sometimes in like New York and places. They eat, and what they eat is rich, and you know, pasta is all pasta and cheese and things like that. But you never see them like gorging. You know, it's not like huge quantities of food. It just seemed like a really healthy, balanced way of living. And the routine as well, where in Sorrento, because it's quite far south, they have from 1 o'clock until 5 o'clock, they go home and take a nap and have something to eat and go to the beach. And then they go back to work at 5. But from 1 until 5, everything was closed. like the whole, and it's a big, pretty big town. And it was just the restaurants were still open.
Is this still common in the north?
I'm not sure.
Or traditional in the south?
It's common.
I think it's probably still common in the north.
It's common, and in Spain, the same thing, you know. And then they eat dinner very late.
Then they work from 5 to what?
It depends where, but probably like 10.
Mm-hmm. And then they have a late dinner somewhere.
And the street life, too.
Yeah, everybody comes out at night, which was really cool. Especially on a Sunday night, you see all the families out, and they're dressed in their finest. Like, in Italy, I'd never seen so much, like, bling, where everything was, like, rhinestones on everything and logos and matching boots and bags and full makeup. And the men would be wearing, like, purple was the in color, I guess, that season, because a lot of the men had entire outfits of purple, like purple jeans with a purple shirt tucked in, like the works. And they, you know, they like to dress up and then they go out and just walk around and see and be seen. That's what they do, which I really liked. I thought that was a great tradition.
Yeah, they do that in Spain too, from like 7 to 8 o'clock every night. It's the promenade, and they, all the families and all the generations together, and even the babies in the baby carriages are dressed up in these fancy clothes with big bows and all that. And it's such a great thing to do. Probably prevents a lot of the depression that people have of at different ages in cultures where they're more isolated in their homes.
I think so. I just, I loved being there. I was very it was very easy to be happy in Italy. I had a pretty good lifestyle though, because I didn't have anything to do until 6 o'clock at night, and then I would have dinner at the hotel where I worked and sing at, I would start singing at 8 o'clock for an hour, and then I had another break until 10:30, and then I sang for another hour. And then I just hung out in Italy the rest of the time. It was great.
So we've been talking, if you just tuned in, to my daughter, Adrienne Dowler, who is back in the U.S. after living in England for 5 years and singing in Italy for the last 3.5 months.
So is it looking like you'll be in Fairfield for a while?
I think so. I'll be here for at least 8 or 9 months, I would imagine. And then probably New York, but we'll see. Could do anything at this point, I think. Could go anywhere. It's a new beginning for me.
Well, I love that.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.